the viaduct looms like a bird of doom as it shifts and cracks. Where secrets lie in the border fires and the humming wires. Hey man, you know you're never coming back. Across the square, across the bridge, across the mills, across the stacks. On a gathering storm comes a toll.
Welcome to Scaredy Cats, first ever episode, part of the Everything Unscripted Network. Tonight we're going to be doing the Friday the 13th reboot. I'm one of your co-hosts, Daniel Hummer. I'm here with my sister, Mindy.
Hello, everybody. How are we doing?
Doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm okay.
We're going to get into this, and this is a good one to start out with. We're kind of on a bad remake train a little bit, so we're going to be going through those for a while, and we're starting with Friday the 13th. Before we get into that, we got a couple plugs. Make sure to listen to the Dirt Sheet Dudes, Boss and Smark, every Wednesday and Friday after NXT and AEW, and then after SmackDown on Friday. Make sure to listen to us, Unscripted Wrestling, every Friday around 6:30, and Settle It in the Ring on Saturdays at 6. And make sure to listen to this, our horror podcast. Today we're doing three. We don't have a specific time slot yet. We'll get that squared away soon, but it's going to be Sundays, so we know that for sure. And yeah, we got a lot of good stuff coming up. If you're not a fan already, now's the time to become it. We've been doing podcasts every day during the weekend, and we're getting stuff popping. So to get started into this, Scaredy Cats, a little background on this. Me and Mindy have been horror fanatics for a long time. You got me started when I was younger.
Yes, I did. I believe first time I ever let you watch, well, I never let him watch a horror movie. He watched it behind my shoulder without me knowing at like 3 o'clock in the morning, but he was about 2 when it first happened. My father willingly let me watch The Candyman when I was like 10 months old. So,
yeah.
We have a track record of starting you young in our family. You start out young. The younger, the better.
Absolutely. And we're starting here with one of my favorite series, the reboot here to Friday the 13th. Technically, this is a reboot, not a remake, because they wanted to kind of re-envision the franchise a little bit. But they only got one movie out of it. To kind of start us off here, Mindy, why reboot Friday the 13th in 2009? What do you think they were thinking?
I believe it was more of a cinematic jump because they had went from using New Line Cinemas to Parallel Pictures, going back to New Line Cinemas for this one as well. And I feel like New Line was like, let's see how we can one-up our competition. Yeah. Let's see if we can reboot the franchise like they were trying to do. Do I think they failed? Miserably. But like I've said before, and I've said a thousand times, and we'll always will say, this particular movie, though it is very entertaining, it has very too little character development.
Yeah.
You really don't know who is, because they all kind of look alike, except for the black guy and the Asian guy. But that's about it. I mean, but I feel bad because they don't go into depth with any of them except for the young girl, Whitney. Which, spoiler alert, if no one's ever heard this, we are going to be giving spoilers.
Oh, yeah, this is a review, so we'll review a conversation about it. So definitely going to be spoilers. We'll put that in the description. But, yeah, and I agree with you. And I feel like that's kind of a staple in Friday the 13th, to have kind of, you know, the characters are there to do one thing, kind of flirt with each other, hook up, and then get killed. But this is probably the worst group of kids, I'd say, the least. I mean, you got like Chewie and the other guy definitely, you know, bring some comedic elements to it, but it all seems like a big cliche. They don't seem like actual people. They just seem archetypes of kids, you know, like the stoners, the douchebag, the hot girl. Like
the sweet girl next door that just wants to help everybody because she feels bad. Nice older brother that's looking for her sister. It's all just a lot of cliches.
Yeah. You don't see, like, genuine characters you can really relate to.
Like, the douchebag, the hookup girl, just, like, it It does cover all of the cliches, I will have to say. It does a really good job of doing that, but I think that also is what shot itself in the foot.
Yeah, a little bit, because you don't care about the characters dying as much. And this is one thing you and me talked about, too. The first group of kids were probably more likable and would be a better movie if you would have just drawn that out and then maybe reversed it and they weren't just the slaughter at the first. Because that group of kids, I mean, you got a good actor in Ben Feldman that plays Jonah on Superstore. You know, he seemed really passionate and good in that. Even the geeky kid and, you know, Whitney, obviously, and her boyfriend. You know, you
Michael.
Had Michael. You had different characters. And they just kind of got killed at first. That opening scene, a lot of people, this movie gets shit on, but a lot of people praise that. Do you think that's probably the most intense and scariest parts of the movie, the beginning scene?
Yes and no, because it's not really anything we haven't seen from Jason. But I do feel like as a whole, it did make the movie more suspenseful.
Yeah.
I will have to say, because of the fact that like, when he was coming up from the floor and coming after Michael, and Michael had thrown Whitney into the tub and whatnot, they didn't know that it was a Jason. They didn't know what was going on. They just knew that something was attacking them from the floorboard. And for Jason to be that methodical, but also be that intelligent to where he creates a sewer device underneath the camp to get from place to place and be able to kill you from the ground up. And that's really cool, actually. I really feel like they should have been able to keep that going. But as far as the first group of kids, I do feel like they were more likable as a whole. But, like, I do feel like they got killed off way too quickly for us to really kind of even be like, oh, well, we wish they were the ones that stayed.
Yeah.
Because they did get killed off pretty quickly.
Yeah, they didn't have time to do much.
Yeah, I mean, they were likable. But I think if we would have just been left with them the entire movie, it would have been a shorter movie. And I don't see it being any better.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I can see that, too, because I just don't know if it's necessary. Well, it's kind of necessary to get a lot of kills out of the way because that's what people go to these things for.
Exactly. Jason, by far, is one of the top body count people.
Yeah. That's what you're expecting from these things. And, you know, it gives us that, I think, kind of getting the stuff we like about the movie first before we go in on it. I think the kills in this and the way Jason acts, like, I like having an athletic type Jason that can move and he seems smart. This script isn't really written well, but making Jason smart.
He's so much witted. He's quick to begin with. I mean, the old Jason, he was like the old Michael Myers. You'd have to wait like 15 minutes to actually get up to somebody.
Yeah.
And then he would magically be in front of that person with like being 40 feet behind him the next minute. So, in this one, it was very interesting to see him make the jump from being slow and methodical to being fast and quick-witted.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It almost seemed like what we were saying earlier about the characters, it almost seemed like the filmmakers put all their time and energy into making him such a developed kind of character and the way he acts and the tunnel
definitely.
System and all that shit. And less time on making his characters that way. Because, I mean, some of these are dry, like Chewy and the other guy, I gotta find his name.
Mason?
Yes, Mason.
The blonde hair boy?
No. Mason, what's his name? Is it, Chewy's friend. It might be Mike. That's all right. But the guy that comes out and looks for him at the end and is like running and stuff, and he's really funny, and he's one of the better Lawrence.
Yeah.
And he's one of the better parts of this this movie. But it kind of like stereotypes in these movies do exist sometimes, and it sucks. But it's the way the era's. It's still 2009. People aren't really smart enough yet. They kind of make him like he's like an aware token character. Like he's like, why are you always like because I'm black, I can't listen to Green Day. That's one of the funniest lines in this and stuff like that.
Yeah, because he brings up the record label starting, and one of the blonde little engineers turn to him and go, "Oh, really? What kind of music? Rap?" And he's like, "Really? You really think that since I'm the only black man here, the only thing I listen to is rap? What, a black man can't listen to Green Day?"
Yeah.
And she's like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. What is it? Rap." And then he just cocks a smile at her and turns away. That was great.
Yeah. Him and Chewie are the only two characters that kind of work for me. Like, as the comic relief, they are kind of funny and busting out the pot and stuff. And they act, kind of act how teenagers act.
Exactly. I like when they pull out their one little smoking device or whatnot named Jolene or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, "Oh, I saw you. Lawrence, I saw you cheating on me the bowl." The voice for me. He's like, "Baby, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, baby." Like, they had such a good chemistry. Like, even when they were sitting down watching the blonde girl, like, do her thing, like, swaying her hips back and forth, like, they both knew that they could not get a girl like that.
Yeah.
They were both okay with that. They were like, "We're just chilling. We're just watching her do her thing. We're not going to get there."
Yeah. And that's the only relationship to me in the movie that seems genuine. Because, like, I'm sorry, but it's so hard to believe. Like, Trent, I love Trent because I just love how they wrote him to be such a douchebag.
Arrogant douchebag.
Yeah. It's like, you're just not supposed to like this fucking dude. He's the one guy in the movie that you want to die. Which, like, the stereotypical douche. But him being with Danielle Panabaker, it does not make any sense whatsoever.
No.
They have no chemistry. They seem to not like each other at all. Like,
he seems to be sex, 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 sex. And she seems to be like, "Oh, let's go take a walk.
Yeah.
Let's go swimming. Or, like, let's do something outdoorsy. Or, shit, let's stay in and watch a movie. Or do something like that." He's more like, "No, fuck, 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 fuck,
yeah."
Fuck. So it's a little different. Like, it's a little quirky. It doesn't really work. And
no.
I think that's why they kind of had to throw in Jared Padalecki in there with his character.
Yeah.
To kind of save her character and make her character not only a little bit more relatable, but for her to develop a little bit more and us to get her to know her a little bit better.
Yeah.
Because I feel like had they just left her with Trent the entire time, you wouldn't have gotten to know her.
Yeah, no, and well, that's what kind of ruined it for me, because it's like, you think, like, she seems like a really nice girl, and it's like, why is she with this asshole? Like, it makes you think, like, and they don't even get into why. They have one conversation, and it's not really anything. He's kind of like, he's less douchey to her when they're talking alone, but it still doesn't really explain why she would even talk to this guy. Like, why is she around him? Why is she with these people that don't even seem to care about her?
Well, coming from the woman's side of things, I will have to say it's very, very, very hard to fit in with a group of people, especially when you're in college, like this young lady was.
Yeah.
And finding herself attractive and finding yourself not only being attracted to, but having somebody reciprocate those feelings that are not only so wealthy, but he was also a very good-looking young man.
Yeah.
So she thought, well, he's going to take care of me. Everything's going to be okay. I just got to follow what he tells me to do. And you can very much so see that relationship with two of them, like when they're in the gas station. And, like, she feels bad for Jared's character, and she wants to reach out to him and tell him, "I'm really sorry for what's going on. Like, how can I help you?" And Trent's like, "No, you stay here with me.
Yeah.
I'm your man. You don't move."
Yeah.
And I also think that maybe why he kind of cheated on her, because he was so angry and so spiteful and such a douchebag.
Yeah. But even with her character with Jared Padalecki, Clay, that's so underdeveloped too. And, you know, they seem to have a little chemistry and they talk, but, like, you can't really get into that because the whole thing is him finding his sister too, right? Like, Whitney's pretty much the main goal here. And he gets a lot of screen time trying to find her, going to see people, asking about them.
But he does save Danielle a couple of different times, like when your buddy Lawrence ends up being in trouble. She wants to go help him because of how genuine she is. And he tells her, no, like, the only reason he's still alive at this point is because Jason's keeping him around for him to scream for one of us to go out there.
Yeah.
He's a trap.
Yeah.
Which we saw come to light, like, maybe, like, 30 seconds later.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like she did get a lot of character development, but I do feel like they should have went farther with her. Like, they should have went into why would she be with somebody like that.
Yeah, and I'm fine with her dying. You don't need two final girls.
No, you don't.
And it was a nice little tease, like, oh, and then it's a nice surprise at the end. Because watching this back, I had forgot, because I saw it back in the day, but I was younger. And when I watched it again with you, but I watched it back, and I was like, oh, my God, like, it did shock me a little bit. I thought those three were going to escape. So when she got capped, it was like, oh, my God.
It was very, very unexpected. It happened very unexpectedly at a very unexpected time.
I'm cool with that. Yeah.
And I'm all for it. I'm here for it. I love the jumps and scares. I will have to say, as much as I don't like this movie, it is very entertaining to me. I've found myself jumping more than a couple of times in a movie. And you, my friend, know I do not jump.
No, it's hard. It's really hard.
Very hard to get me to jump.
Yeah.
Well, if you get me to jump, go ahead and give yourself an Academy Award, a clap, and a pat in the back, friend, because that means you got me.
Yeah. No,
you got
hard.
Me at the point where I'm so engrossed in the what I'm seeing that when something does scary pop up, I'm going to jump and be like, oh, my goodness, what was that?
Yeah.
And normally, no one can get me to that route. Because normally, I'm like, oh, well, same thing that I've always seen. I mean, they're doing it a little bit better, but that's great. But, like, if you get me zoned in,
it's
game over, slides out.
Yeah. And especially, like, the last scene, like, we knew what was going to happen. We knew he's jumping from the dock and pulling her in. But they did it in such a way, it's like, oh, my God, I jumped, too.
We still
jumped. Holy shit. Like, that was scary. And one thing, another thing I'll say I like about this movie, because we got into Jason, how he acts. The actor, Derek Mears, the stunt guy that did, like, he is a convincing, scary Jason. If that guy came up to me dressed like that, I would probably piss myself.
Yeah. He was not only scary, but as we say, like, quick-witted and very, very, very fast. But not only was he that, but he added to, like, the mutant version that you know of Jason, like the guy that can, like, get stabbed but then, like, throw the knife out of his own face and throw it at somebody else's.
Yeah.
He very much so embraced that, but also made it a little bit more powerful. Like, the fact that he was able to run and throw his machete as fast and as controlled as he did was impressive.
Yeah. That was cool. That was a cool death. That was cool. The machete through the forehead.
He was just very quick. At the same time, I like this one a little bit more for the kills than I do the original. And people don't kill me. It's just because the original, yes, Mrs. Voorhees has some amazing kills, hats off to her, but you'd never see it.
Yeah, it's all off screen.
That's all off screen.
Yeah.
You only see what happens to him after.
You got a couple off screen.
I
want to
see what goes on right then and there.
Yeah.
Like the fact that he walks in the tool shed and rips and someone's head goes off, like, that's what I want.
Yeah.
Going to the movie theater instead of sitting there watching all these camp counselors disappear one by one. No.
Yeah. He only does that a couple times here, too. And it's done in a way to where it's like, you know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Wade at the beginning, the geeky kid, when he, like, slashes at him, and then you know what happened. Like,
but you still saw him as the thing.
Later, yeah. When Jonah found him.
No. Right? You saw him right before he sliced and diced that kid's head. he looked at him through his glow stick. He was able to see him. He leaned down to look at the pot with the glow stick, and then he leaned up to look at his GPS and saw through the glow stick that there was somebody right in front of him. It was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And Jason killed him.
Yeah.
So Jason did make himself known to every single one of his victims.
Oh, no, Jason wasn't off screen. It's just the kill itself. Like, he goes to kill him, and then you don't see him die. You just see his body later. So like,
yeah, you see his body later. Yeah, the death is definitely off screen. But that's like maybe like the only one he does.
Yeah.
That's off screen. All the other ones are on screen, which is impressive in itself.
Yeah.
Especially since he's just one single killer. Because I want to say he at least got into almost the 10, into the double digits.
Oh, yeah. I think it was about 16 or something like that.
And that's impressive for one person. I mean, whether he be a person or a mutant or whatever the heck you think he is, it's still impressive.
And that's one thing you got to give this movie, and it's probably the one thing I was excited to talk to you about. This has some of the best kills in the series.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, for instance, when one boy is driving Trent's boat with his girlfriend and he gets a arrow right through the head. Like, you're not even expecting
no.
it. They're having fun. They're having a good time.
Yeah, Nolan.
Like, her shirt's off. His shirt's off. They're doing a great... They're having a wonderful time out on the lake. And then all of a sudden, he looks back and just boom. And then the poor girl, like, you think that she may or may not get out of it. First, she gets run over with the boat. Poor thing. And then she gets over to a pier where she thinks she's all safe. And he still stabs her through the head.
Yeah.
And she don't even know where he is. That was brilliant.
It was.
Like, that's the kind of stuff that makes me go, oh, that was a great kill.
Yeah.
That was good. Because, like, she didn't even know. There wasn't any suspense with that because she didn't know where he was.
Yeah.
She didn't even know her boyfriend was dead at first. When she got hit by the boat. At first, she thought that he was completely fine. And then she got hit with the boat, and she realized he wasn't.
That's your favorite one, too, right?
That has to be one of my favorite kills. Yes, I will have to say. There are a couple that are, like, right behind it. But I will have to say that's one of my favorites. Another one of my favorites is when he kills Trent.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Just because I was waiting for the... When that mother douchebag opened his mouth, I was waiting for something to happen to him. So it was just way too sweet when it finally did. It was like, hallelujah.
And that was done in a real creepy way, too, to where it's like, could Jason be driving the truck? Like, could Jason actually be driving? Because this is a reboot. Anything can happen, you know? Like, obviously, he's faster, he's quicker. He's got an underground fucking tunnel system. Could this dude be driving a truck? And
nope,
he's behind
the janitor. From disturbing behavior.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure you noticed. You noticed that, right?
Oh, yeah. The old guy.
Yeah. No, it was the janitor from Disturbing Behavior, that movie with Katie Holmes.
Yeah, the guy in the truck, right?
Yeah, the one that had the obsession with the rats.
Yeah.
And he had the radio on the back of his truck.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He found out that the radio things how they told him. Well, we'll be going over those kind of movies as well, because those kind of movies were classic to the 90s.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And they were very, you have those, you have the faculty, we're going to have to
I would love to do that.
We're going to have to go through all those, because those in themselves are a little bit different.
Oh, yeah, this isn't just a slasher show, there's all kinds of horror.
But as far as this movie goes, I will have to say, I'll be honest with people, I haven't seen that many. I've seen Freddy versus Jason because, of course, who wouldn't have?
Yeah.
I've seen this one a few different times that we're talking about right now. I've also seen the first one a few different times. But for me, I'll have to say that I've enjoyed in life watching more of what spawned from Friday the 13th, which is one of them, which is called Sleepaway Camp. Just if you've never checked out Sleepaway Camp, the first one or any of the sequels or whatnot, I suggest you at least go give them a watch for just once.
Yeah.
It's a very, very good series of movies. Even if you just want to watch the first one, very good. But it did very, very much so get inspiration from Friday the 13th, which is very obvious.
Yeah.
But it wasn't bad. And then there was another one, which I mentioned, which Daniel did not know, which was Cheerleading Camp,
no.
which is kind of a spin on Friday the 13th, but also kind of a spin on Making Somebody Look Crazy. So if you're a fan of these kind of movies, you want to check that out, go ahead. I know for a fact that it's on YouTube, Cheerleading Camp, 1980. Go ahead and look it up.
And the thing is slashers have always kind of borrowed, because you don't get Friday the 13th without Halloween. They had 2 years after, they even said like explicitly, like, yeah, we wanted to cash in on the success of Halloween. We wanted to try that.
And then it kind of backfired for them, because these people tried to go ahead again and reboot this franchise, reboot this series, and Rob Zombie was like, no, hold my coffee.
Yeah. And he got there 2 years earlier, too, because that Halloween was in 2007.
Mm-hmm. So his second one was in 2009.
Yeah.
And that is what beat this movie at the box office, was the second Halloween. Everyone was waiting for that. So, and I will have to say, as many times as I had to watch the second, and mind you, people, I just say had to, because Rob Zombie, he is a mind-bending director.
Yeah.
Like, it takes a very long time for you to figure out what street he's going down. And in the second one, I believe me and Daniel ourselves had to watch it at least, like, 3 or 4 times to figure out what exactly was going on.
Yeah.
So, and that was the second one. The first one was pretty cut and dry. You knew what was going on. You knew the story and everything. But the second one, they just completely did it completely differently, and it was good. So unfortunately for this movie that we're talking about right now, the Friday the 13th remake, unfortunately it did not do as well.
Yeah, but it made a lot of money, though. Like, it made $92 million with a $19 million budget. Like, any film company, that's a success. Mm-hmm. Especially like for rebooting. Like, I honestly think the only reason there's not a second one is because the plot and everything got shit on so much. And then it did so critically bad.
And I think that's why, too, because honestly, like you said, the box office numbers say a lot.
Yeah.
And that is true. Like, we've seen the box office go after those numbers and do cash grabs and do cash-ins and everything. And there's one thing that makes a horror fanatic very angry is cash grab.
Yeah.
We don't like cash grabs. But you want to make us a horror movie, make us a horror movie, sweetheart.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't, then don't. Like, one movie I will never review on this channel, but I will talk about it right now, is the movie Ma from 2018.
Oh, yeah.
You cannot make me watch a movie that only has 20 minutes of action in it. What in the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
That movie was 1 hour and 20 minutes long, and the only action was in the last 20 minutes. I had to sit through 1 hour to figure out what the hell was going on. And then once I figured out it was all because of a prank, because she ended up kissing a pig, whoop-de-doo, I ended up getting shoved down the stairs by people. It's life. It's bullying. Welcome to high school, sweetheart. Doesn't mean you look up the people's kids and you kill them. What is wrong with you? And she didn't even kill them. That's the saddest part. She got nothing done that she wanted to do, people. So if you want to go out there, you want to torture yourself, you want to watch the worst horror movie out there, and I've seen Rubber, people. I have seen the movie Rubber.
Yeah.
But go watch Ma.
Yeah, Ma was
horrible. It was awful. I was so upset that we spent money on it and actually went to see it.
Yeah, that was not that good. We were talking about Zombie, and I do think we have to shout out this director, too, because Marcus Nispel, he did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre reboot, too, that we watched recently in 2003. And
which was more of a remake.
Yeah, that was a remake. But he, like, he makes a pretty movie. Like, these glossy remakes, I know people, like, they do get critically panned for, like, the plot and stuff, but they look so
gritty.
Good. Yeah, they
and
look
so
beautiful.
And they're so real. Like, yeah. The blood is just the, like, it's the almost exact color of somebody's blood, and the kills are just so darn creative, but you can actually see it happening. And he does. He creates a very pretty but morbid picture.
Yeah.
For you.
That's like your nightmare. Like, what I would have a nightmare of what Crystal Lake would be, that's like what it would be. What
absolutely.
He makes. I think he does well with that.
He takes pride in his work with that. And I think that really stands out.
Yeah, it's a real glossy movie. It's a nice view.
Yes.
But another scene that you were talking about earlier that I want to get into is him finding his mask, because they were going to do this in a different way, but they switched it up. Get into that a little bit.
Yeah, I actually took the opportunity to watch the making of this movie. A lot of people that know me know that I am a horror movie buff through and through, so not only do I watch the movies and read the content and everything, but I do have a little bit of a documentary bug, and I will go out there and see what happened and whatnot and how it happened and everything. And I was lucky enough to see the Warner Brothers little bit of documentary. It was only about 15 minutes, but they showed the scene where Donnie was the one hillbilly hit guy was in his shed, and he was looking for the kerosene that was missing. A lot of people know this part, but a lot of people know it as Creepy Donnie making with the mannequin.
Yeah.
He was not making out with the mannequin at the first part. He had actually already had the mask on, which is not true. And the in the movie that came out, he didn't have the mask on. Jason found it. But in this one, he has the mask on, and he's whacking off to a magazine. And Jason finds him, runs up real quick, grabs the top of his head, boom, with the machete right at the neck. And then you see Jason's cloth mask fall off along with this guy's head, which is unmasked. And then you see him, like, putting the last finishing touches on the mask, like, tightening it up and stuff on his face. And I am a little upset that they cut that, because the only reason they cut it was because they didn't think the kerosene meant that made that much sense. But it was mentioned like 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
In the film. So I really don't get why they had such a problem putting it in there and saying it made no sense when it didn't.
Yeah, Donnie mentioned it a few times about people stealing kerosene.
Yeah, you're saying that his boss was really getting angry and was going to kill somebody for it. So it was set up to be a thing from the beginning. I just feel that they should have stuck with it the way it was. I'm a very big fan of if it's not fixed and if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't broken. It didn't need fixing. But they're the directors. We're the fans. There's a reason why they do what they do. There's a reason why we get to pick apart what they do. But to that being said, I do feel that the original scene was much better. But it is what it is. Like I said, I'm not a director. I will never pretend to be a director.
We can make a decent horror movie, I think. But
yeah.
Do you think that the surviving duo of Jared Padalecki and his sister was the way to go?
Yeah, but here's the thing. You don't know if they survive.
Yeah, well, he pulls her down, yeah. And we'll never fucking know what happened.
Yeah, they left it very open for part two.
Yeah, well, they wanted it,
because they wanted the part two.
Yeah.
They were going for the part two.
They didn't
get the funding and the budget for part two, which makes me so mad, because this movie ended like The Sopranos.
Yeah.
Like, it ended with Jason rising up from the pier, knocking over Jared's character, going after his sisters, and you don't know what happened to them because it just cuts to black. What happened to the kids? You don't have a second part. What happened to them? Like, is she still locked up in your sewer basement thing because you think she's your mom? Or what is going on here? Because he thought that she was his mother for, like, the entire film.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I know you haven't seen a lot of them. Part two, though, the Ginny, one of the greatest final girls of all time, in my perspective, has a child psychology degree, so she's a smart girl. She's not like your typical bimbo in these movies. And she does the thing to him to where she holds the locket kind of like Whitney does, but she uses more of the psychology, not that she looks like her. She uses more of the psychology to make him think that she's his mom.
And I get that whole trope. I really do. It's been used a few different times.
Yeah.
Even in Halloween, in the Rob Zombie movies, it was used when she found the picture of herself, baby Michael, and she didn't know what was going on. And she acted like she was going to help him, but she stabbed him and said, that's been things that we've seen
before.
But they did do it. But I still don't understand why Whitney, because she really didn't look that much like the kid's mom.
Well,
I'm sorry.
That's what I was going to say. The second one, they played that good, and that was fine. But Whitney does not look like Pamela Voorhees. She doesn't look like her.
Like, even the new and improved Pamela that they put in this one, that they had with black hair and whatnot, she still didn't look like her.
Yeah. And there's some things, getting to what kind of annoys me about this movie, is Tommy Jarvis, probably if there is a hero to this series, Scream has their Sydney, Lori to Halloween,
Ash to Evil Dead,
and then if Friday the 13th has one of those, Ginny was the great final girl in part two, but the actress never came back because she didn't want the money that was on the table. Who cares? But Tommy Jarvis would be the hero. I'd say in the series, his three movie trilogy, like he was the guy to go up against Jason. The filmmakers said they did not want to put him in this movie just because they wanted to create their own mythology.
Yes, exactly. They wanted to create a different realm.
Yeah, but
for Jason to live in.
But what did they create though? Like the whole shit with Clay, like does it really not have that much fucking legs? Like what mythology? Like you just made a dude with a missing sister. There's no fucking mythology.
And there wasn't. I mean, like you said, it was a missing sister. He was trapped in a sewer that no one knew existed by a mental patient who goes psycho and thinks that she looks like his mommy, which I'm sorry, but his mommy died in front of him when he was in 1980. And this movie is based in 2009. How can you think that she's your mother?
Yeah.
Are you serious? She watched her mother get killed like 30 plus years ago. I know you're stupid, sweetheart, but you can't be that dumb. Come on.
Yeah, and it's another thing. Like, the filmmakers are like, it's like they know what's going on, but they're not going to tell you. The one blonde chick that got killed off, she was in a behind-the-scenes thing, and she was actually said something really smart. She's like, Jason doesn't like people having sex because people were having sex when he got neglected and got drowned in the thing, and that's what bothers him. So that's why whenever he sees people fucking, he goes after them, and it's like, oh, that's really cool. Why don't you get into that in the movie? Or, like, explain it a little bit.
Yeah, the sex and the partying and stuff. And I do feel that the only time they ever really did go into that is when Ginny in part two kind of doubled in that a little bit.
Yeah.
And was kind of like, oh, well, if Jason is a real person, then maybe he was set off by everyone having sex and partying around him and letting him drown.
Yeah, exactly. So when he sees that, it's like, yeah, you're right. But talk about, like, you don't even have to say it, but
back it up.
Yeah, a little bit in the movie. And there is things I do like about this thing. You said your favorite kill. I'll get into mine because I'm going to have to give it to actor Aaron Yeoh from Disturbia fame before this. My boy Chewie. He goes out to the tool shed and what?
Because he broke a chair.
He broke a chair when he's taking a flaming shot, and it hits his lips and he fucking falls. And but that is that's Trent's whole character arc in this movie. Is just
stupid.
Yeah, but Trent's whole character arc is quit fucking up my house. Like, that's just the whole movie.
Oh,
it's
Trent?
Just like,
yeah.
Yeah. That's all. Trent's whole character arc is just like, don't piss on my floor. Don't fucking drop booze. Don't do any of this. Like, that's
not drinking out of your shoe.
Yeah. Like, don't fuck up my house, dude. And he messes up a chair. So he's like, all right, go to the tool shed. We know as soon as Chewie's told he's going to the tool shed that bye-bye, Chewie. It was nice to know you. Pretty much,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, basically. But it was... He still had a really good kill. And he had a really good... like, Lawrence.
That was good.
They took time developing this character.
Yeah, a little more time
than
the rest, yeah.
Like, with him and Lawrence, like, you could tell, like, they were really good buddies. Like, they knew what their standards were and how their standards didn't match up with them because they were, well, because their standards were way too high. But, I mean, they had a very, like, Cheech and Chong relationship.
Yeah. Oh, I agree, yeah. And the screwdriver, whatever it was, to the neck. And they really showed it. That's where you get the gore. They do not turn away. And you really see Chewie get fucked up with that thing.
Yeah, they do not shy away from the gore. If you are a gore fan, definitely check this one out. You will love it. You will not be disappointed. A lot of gore.
Yeah. The only thing I would say about the characters is I wish I would have a little more screen time. Like the blonde guy, Nolan. You and me were talking, like, we like him. Like, he seems like the cool, fun one. Like, ow! And stuff.
We've already seen him in a few different movies as well, too.
Yeah.
In the era. He was in a few different horror movies as well, and he got really far.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's why I thought that in this one, it was a given that he was going to go far. So the fact that he was, like, pulled so quickly, it was kind of like, oh.
Yeah, he didn't even make it to the party at night, you know?
No.
He was donezo.
But, I mean, and it was a fabulous kill.
Yeah, it was.
But it is a little disappointing to see him be killed like that. It was like, I would have been okay seeing like one of the other throwaway characters be killed like that.
Yeah.
Instead of him.
Now, what do you think? Because Friday the 13th, the series, has gone in so many fucking... I mean, the man's gone to space. The man's gone to hell. What do you...
He's gone back in time.
He's gone back in time. A lot like Scream, even though Scream kind of started this, they got into a lot of comedy with Friday the 13th. Jason be doing wacky shit, ripping people's heads off.
And I think that was the kind of the way that it went in the 1980s.
Yeah.
You had this. You had Creepshow. You had Freddy. And a lot of them took, and even Sleepaway Camp took the threat as well. They became not only sinister and cynical, but they also became kind of quirky.
Yeah, fun.
And kind of funny.
Yeah.
Like, you wanted to hear what was going to come out of their mouth, because it was usually kind of quick-witted and kind of funny.
Yeah.
Like, especially Freddy. Freddy was very, very punny and just very funny and a riot to listen to. And to watch, because he did things that would gross people out, and also at the same time it wouldn't be real because he was in their heads.
Yeah.
So it was just, it was different. It was a different kind of horror back then. And like these movies, like we've said, it became cheesy and comedy-like, but so did the Halloween movies. And
all of them did.
Like a lot of, almost every single one of the series, I want to say, except for Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I will have to say is the only one.
Yeah, that always kept its tone. Pretty
yeah,
much.
That always kept its serious tone.
Well, what did you think about this having very little comedy going from those old movies? And because this reboot, I mean, there's not like couple things that like Chewie in them, but besides that, like. Jason's not funny. He's not supposed to be funny.
He's not supposed to be funny, though. And I think that's what helps them in the reboot, is that he's just so scary looking.
Yeah.
In the reboot. He really is. He's just so scary. So the fact that he's not only terrifying looking, but he has the quickness and the agility to back that up, that's scary.
Yeah.
I mean, Freddy, you can only get so believable.
Yeah.
With him. I mean, and Michael, like I told you before, it's going to take him like 15 minutes for him to catch you. So if you run, you may be okay.
About this, though, I will say I like the kills. There is a lot of things I like, and I am a fan of the franchise.
Oh, I know you are.
But I did get very little scares in this. Like, there was those couple jumps, but I did not find this overall, like, scary.
No, it was more suspenseful.
Yeah. It was a little creepy.
Yeah, but, and it was more suspenseful of anything because it was like, all right, I know he's out there, but where is the little bastard?
Yeah.
I know he's coming, but where is he coming from? Because they'd be like having him come through the trenches, having him come through the sewers and on top of piers. You didn't know where he was.
Yeah.
So that's what I believe is the scariest part of this movie is, okay, we know he's coming. Where the hell is he?
Where is he? What would you do differently about this movie to make it work?
I would definitely take out the first round of characters. Definitely. Because I just feel having two separate rounds of characters bit him in the ass.
Okay.
A little bit. Just in my opinion. I don't feel like there's a need for it. But it is what it is. I get why they did it. They needed Whitney there. They needed that little bit of backstory. That could have very well been done in a matter of a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
But they wanted to do it the way that they wanted to do it. But I do think that that is part of what shot themselves in the foot. And like I've also said, the character development. As much as us horror fans love to see them get sliced and diced and everything, we like to learn a little bit about them.
Yeah.
Like, we like to learn a little bit about their characters. Like, whether it's just, like, the natural horror tropes that were in this one, like with the douchebag and the athletic kid.
Yeah.
The rap kid and, like, you had all the stereotypes and everything. But it was different.
Well, and I don't want to be – I'm not trying to call out Damian Shannon or Mark Swift, but this script is dog shit. I'm sorry. As a fan of writing and a fan of screenplay writing, and I'm not going to claim to be a writer, but I know what good movies are and good dialogue is. And the actor – even some of the actors can go. Like, Jared Padalecki can act. You've seen it in Supernatural. You've seen – I mean, Danielle Panabaker can act a little bit. Ben Feldman. You know, these people can act, but, like
– I mean, Jared Padalecki himself had a few horror movie runs.
Yeah, House of Wax.
House of Wax. This one, I believe he did one with Call. He was in a few different horror movies. He was in one of The Grudges. So he did a few, and he was really good at it. That's why they chose him for Supernatural.
Yeah, but it feels like they had nothing to work with here.
No.
It felt a lot was kind of improv,
dry.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah. It was very dry. You can tell a lot of it was improv, and I really feel like the only reason it did so well is because so many people were waiting for it. It was such a highly anticipated film.
Yeah.
That's why it did so financially well. But then if you actually go to critics and reviewers and stuff, they're like, eh, no.
Yeah, it did awful critically.
Because it really was not a good movie. I'm sorry, Daniel. I know how much you love Jason. But this was the best Jason movie, I will have to say, for him as a character. It even gave him a little bit more of a background story. Like, when you see him lurking through the shadows and watching his mother get killed, that wasn't anything that they really went over in the earlier series.
Yeah.
Him watching his mom get killed. They never discussed that. They never even went into the possibility of that being a thing.
Well, yeah, and I think that's where they just messed up here is because you had an opportunity to do so much, and I feel like they just did very little.
Yeah.
Like, they did – to me, this did not have to be a reboot. This could have just been another sequel, and it could have been fine and dandy, and that's okay. But like the fact that it was a reboot, it was supposed to be something new.
They tried too hard.
Yeah, and it didn't add much to me. Like it didn't like make anything much different. They overstuffed it. Like Pamela Voorhees, the first 4 minutes is just outrageous, and that's it. That's all you see from her, and she gets her head chopped off in the first 4 minutes.
And not to mention, in the trailer versus movie, she says two different things.
Really?
In the trailer, she says when she's going on about the girl not paying attention to a woman, why she has to die, she says it's his birthday.
Yeah.
After she goes, I'm doing this for Jason. She goes in the trailer, she goes, it's his birthday. In the movie, she doesn't say that.
They cut it out?
Yeah, so they don't know why on earth she's even doing it.
Yeah.
Or why she waited 2 years. But the reason she waited 2 years is because it was his birthday. And she snapped. But
yeah,
I just feel like a prequel would have been a lot better than a reboot.
Well, it was going to start as a Jason origin story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would have even been cool. You show him a little more at the camp getting bullied and stuff and
exactly.
Do that in a scary way.
And crying out to his mother. A lot of people don't know this, but his mother worked at the camp.
Yeah.
His mother was a cook.
And then you could show his mom going nuts.
Exactly.
Because I think that what doesn't work for a lot of people is this is a reboot of Friday the 13th, but as everyone that watches Scream knows, Jason's not the killer in the first Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
It's his mother, you know. I mean, yes, he does show up. They are wrong in that aspect. We talked about it earlier. He does show up at the end of the movie,
but
he's not the
killer.
And no.
A lot of people get that wrong.
Yeah.
Actually, not just even Scream. A lot of people get that wrong. Like, if you walk up to somebody and he turned it to Harry on the street, and they're like, hey, who killed him the first Friday the 13th? They're going to tell you Jason.
Yeah.
But no, that's not true. His mother did it.
Yeah, his mom did it. So it's hard to reboot it when he's not even the killer in the first one, you know?
Yeah.
I think if they did, I don't know if they could have did it well with just a Pamela Voorhees movie, though, and then do him in the second movie. Because do you think, with the way they set it up for the sequel, do you think that sequel had any legs? Did you want to see Clay and Whitney's story anymore?
Yeah, I wanted to see what happened to Whitney. She was a good final girl.
Ooh.
Because she was smart.
Yeah.
She was smart. She was cunning. She sunk on her toes.
Yeah.
She did what she had to do to get herself out of there. She looked at that locket. She knew this is my only way out is by acting like I'm this mom. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to take that jump. I'm going to act like I'm his mother. I'm going to try and see if I can trick him. She did it. She did it well.
Yeah.
She did it too well. But that still is a very tiresome place to put your mind and body and emotions in. Because from then out, she has to act.
Yeah.
She no longer gets to be Whitney anymore. She has to act like Pamela,
yeah,
like his mother, as she wants to keep him in line. Like, as you see the few times when she does call Jason sternly, he responds to her like she is his mother. She looks at him. He looks at her like she is his authority figure.
Yeah.
And, like, he cowers back every time she yells at him. So that relationship is very real, and I really feel like if they did a second one, they could really bank on that.
Yeah.
As far as Clay goes, he could have died.
Yeah, he was kind of...
He probably already did die. He's probably already dead in the ditch in the fluid somewhere. I love Jared Padalecki. I love him very much. I love him as an actor. House of Wax, great movie, Supernatural, great series. I do not think this was his best movie.
No, I did not need him here. I enjoyed him way better as... Because I like that twist in House of Wax to where you thought he could have been the one that survived, but he died.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like how they did that in House of Wax better. And Chad
they
Michael
had
Murray
two
was.
Final boys.
Yeah.
And the douchebag ended up making it out.
Yeah. Buffalo's own baby, Chad Michael Murray. And, yeah, I like that better. Jared Padalecki, he was okay here, but I didn't need him. I didn't think, like, he's no Tommy Jarvis.
They could have picked a completely different actor, and I wouldn't have known. I wouldn't have ever known that that was supposed to be Jared's part. And no offense to him at all whatsoever, because I really, really, really enjoy that actor, and I really love his work.
Well, me too.
But I feel like I could have just gone without him.
Yeah.
I didn't really need to be there.
I read a review, too. It's like someone said that this was like a bad episode of Supernatural. That's pretty much what it was.
I kind of was, because he'd just gotten into Supernatural. So it very much so was. It was sad for him. I feel terrible for him that he ended up being put in this, because I very much so feel when it comes to him and the other young man that acted in Supernatural, Jason Ankles.
Yeah.
He was in the remake of My Bloody Valentine.
Same year.
Exactly. I feel like they were both chose just because they were in the Supernatural series.
Yeah, me too.
So they're like, let's push them through, let's make them heartthrobs and everything, and then we can get some more bank on the Supernatural series.
Yeah.
Jared's movie, not so much, didn't really do that much. Jason's movie did pretty good.
I
liked My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah. Some people call that an unnecessary remake too, but I really enjoyed it, and that twist at the end was good too.
Yeah, and honestly, like, unless you're from, like the baby boomer area, like the 50s to the 70s or whatnot, or you're like me and you who just, like, love horror and all its aspects and have seen a lot and have read a lot and knows, like, what was the remake and what's not and everything, a lot of people didn't know that Bloody Valentine was a remake.
Yeah.
Because the first one was back in 50-something.
Yeah, and that's a good movie, and it is sort of iconic, but it's not Friday the 13th. It's not the legacy that that has.
Absolutely not. But I will have to say, when it comes to reboots or remakes, I will have to say he won versus...
Yeah, that movie's better.
Versus this one.
Yeah, that movie's way better. I'd have to agree. Now, let's get into, because we talked about greatest kills, and you had your best kill. What do you think was the lamest kill in this movie? As a kill aficionado, who had the worst kill here? I got mine in hand.
I would have to say Blonde Bimbo, blonde little ingenue. Yeah, she was thrown through a window dramatically and everything, but she's already dead.
Yeah, the coat hanger thing wasn't that exciting.
Exactly, and you knew it was going to happen. I mean, and I honestly didn't think she was going to get a coat hanger. I thought he was going to snap her neck, because that's what he looked like he was going to do.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he threw her on a coat hanger. I have been watching Jason for years. I've known of Jason for years. He can snap anyone's neck like a twig. You're telling me he couldn't snap a little blonde girl's neck so you'd put her on coat hanger?
Yeah, I was waiting for the crack. When you looked at his eyes and everything,
I was waiting for the crack. Like, you could even see his forearm flexing.
Yeah.
He was going to make that push, and then he's like, no, let's just put her on a coat hanger. I get serious.
Yeah, it kind of felt anticlimactic and out of place almost.
So that, for me, was the worst kill I had to see.
Yeah, I'd probably have
and
to
the sleeping
agree.
Bag kill, but a lot of people know this about me. I am very, very squeamish when it comes to being burned alive,
yeah,
or being drowned, because my brother knows this. A lot of people know this, but not everyone does. I've had a couple brushes with death, and a couple of them have been with drowning, and I would much rather drown than be burned alive.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but you can't call that lame, though. That's just because it hits a little bit of a nerve. But that
yeah,
is.
I wouldn't say it was lame. I would just say, like, cringy.
Yeah.
It was very hard for me to watch her in that sleeping bag.
Yeah. She looks so claustrophobic, too. But I thought they did it really well.
Oh, they did.
Especially Jonah staring at, like, you. All
he
you
was
know.
He was so helpless because he was caught in the.
Yeah. In the bear trap.
Bear trap. Yeah.
And his leg looked all fucked up.
Oh, he was so screwed. But he tried so hard. And I also think that's why the bear trap got so deep into his skin, because he was struggling so hard to try and get to the other girl.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's all, though. That's the only thing they gave him to say was Amanda 52 times. That's the one thing that is like Ben Feldman, one of my favorite actors. They fucking Wayne, Amanda, Whitney. Like there's just eight sentences. It's just him, people saying people's names. Like you don't give him one. Oh fuck my leg or nothing. It's
yeah,
just,
he can't ever feel for himself in this movie. He's just calling everyone's names out. He's like a auctioneer.
Yeah, like I understand Whitney because he needs her help, but like Amanda, she can't hear you. She's in a sleeping
bag. She's in a sleeping bag. Yeah. Get held over an open roasted fire.
Yeah.
Like she is getting roasted, toasted like they sing about at Christmas time.
Exactly. All right, Mindy, as we close up here, as we're wrapping up, I think we got to get into this quite a bit here. And it's been a fun episode. I'm going to announce what we're doing next week.
Okay.
Before I ask you this, but next week we're going to be doing the Friday the 13th remake to kind of go on our
guys, I'm really sorry. He meant to say Nightmare on Elm Street remake.
Did I say Friday the 13th?
You did again.
Yeah, we did that today. Nightmare on Elm Street remake. We're going to be going into Freddy Krueger. A lot of people shit on that one too, so that'll be fun. We know we have our own opinions on it. 2013, right?
Yes, I do believe it was 2013. It was in the... I believe remakes came in every, like, kind of decade that went by. Like, the 2000s got their own batch. The 2010s got their own batch.
Yeah.
Now we're getting our own batch. And this time, I just feel an Exorcist. And Wrong Turn. I just feel like each horror movie will eventually get its due. It just depends which one's good and which one's not.
Yeah. So that's what we're doing next week. That's going to be fun. I'll make sure to tune into that. Now, finish it up here. It has been 12 years since this movie. It's 2021 now. 2009 was the last time we've seen Jason. Besides the excellent fan films that you got me to watch... in the snow.
Never hike in the snow alone, and never hike in the woods.
Yeah, Never Hike in the Woods is the first one. Snow is the sequel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Two great fan films. Make sure to check them out. But we have not gotten a proper Hollywood Friday the 13th since 2009. Do you think there's room for it in 2021?
I don't think so. I think they'll just be like, no.
You don't think it's ever going to happen again?
Not this year. No, maybe not even next year, because you gotta remember the one that they're constantly competing with is Halloween, and Halloween has already been picked up by Blumhouse.
Yeah, they're thriving.
And they're thriving. They already had their relaunch, and now they already have two more movies that are not only already signed on, have trailers for, and everything else, but they're already, the first one's done.
Yeah.
It's already filmed. So, and then the second one already has a release date and is being filmed and stuff too. So, I feel like if they try again too soon, they're just going to be knocked down by Halloween again. Because it's already a thing again.
Yeah.
So, I feel like they should wait for Halloween and Scream 5 and Candyman and all of that to happen.
Run its course.
And then come back. In a couple years.
But do you think there's an appetite for it when it does come back?
Yes, absolutely. Because every generation has a new little generation of horror buffs. They're so cute. They think they know everything, but they really don't. But they're so adorable. And I feel like there is a possibility for Jason to still live on in that horror genre. Because he really did make up the genre. I mean, nine out of 10 times, and the kid shows up at your house, you're going to be wearing a hockey mask.
Yeah, at Halloween. Yeah, definitely. And it's been, like I said, it's been 12 years, but it's so iconic. Like, the machete and the hockey mask, everyone knows what that is.
Exactly. And like me and you were talking about earlier, not only did we get 12 movies or 11 movies out of this, but they also got an entire TV series out of it. We also got an entire comic book series out of it, a book series out of it. So
countless
it did incredibly
fan
well.
Yeah, countless fan films.
Oh, yeah. I will have to say there's at least 15 fan films.
Yeah.
At least. Some of them are great, like Never Hike in the Woods Alone or Never Hike in the Snow Alone. Those are great. Some are a little bit
flat. Yeah, not so great. Yeah.
But they try. And I will have to say, for fans, they are very dedicated to this series. So I don't think that they'll ever run out of fans.
No.
It's just whether or not they can provide the fans with the right content at the right time is what they're facing. Because they keep coming out with things, but it's not at the right time.
Yeah. I mean, the video game did pretty well, but they're also in a legal dispute between studios, too, right now, right?
Yeah, between New Line and Paramount.
Yeah.
Because New Line owned it, then they sold it to Paramount, then they sold it to the Weinstein Brothers, and then the Weinstein Brothers sold it back to New Line. So now Paramount is suing New Line because of this movie particularly, actually, and because of the video game. Because they feel like New Line took their project, but in all reality, they didn't. Paramount did.
Yeah.
But.
Legal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So this was awesome. We'll definitely be talking about The Man with the Machete at another point in time.
Absolutely. I mean, he does hold a little bit of near and dear in my heart. I'm sure we're going to go over Freddy versus Jason. Great movie, too. If you've never seen that one, we are going to come at that one.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Go ahead and take that a watch, because that's a very good, very, very good movie. It's comical. It's got everything in it that you want it to have.
Oh, yeah. That's a good movie. I'd like to talk about part four at some point. Little Corey Feldman. And there's but definitely tune in next week. Nightmare on Elm Street, 2013. This is Scaredy Cats. If you like what you heard, make sure to keep listening. Share to your friends. Like, subscribe, follow on Spotify and Apple Music, and make sure to tune in next week. And Mindy, this was a blast. And
it was a blast. You too, my bro. This is really fun to be doing.
Absolutely, and we'll see everybody next time.
All right, see ya.
Take a little walk to the edge of town and go across the track where the viaduct looms like a bird of doom as it shifts and cracks. Where secrets lie in the border fires and the humming wires. Yeah, man, you know you're never coming.